This is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. On today's episode of Wandering DMs, we're doing a wrap-up live stream from the floor of TotalCon here in Marlborough, Massachusetts, where we've been for the last 4 days for TotalCon 2020. How's the con been for you, Paul?
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Yeah. I've really enjoyed it. I did way too much DMing. Anyone who has watched our stream from last year this time when we were at the convention may recall, I may have said, I don't remember, that I had kind of screwed up scheduling stuff for myself and so only ran a limited number of games.
Right.
So I may have overcompensated a little this year and signed myself up to run 7 games while we were here over the course of 4 days.
Yeah, so I feel like that might be the most interesting thing to focus on here, actually.
Sure.
I did not DM or run anything, actually. So it might be more on point for Wandering DMs to focus on the stuff where we're actually DMing. The other thing is, I mean, to begin with, we kind of thought, like we did last year, we might be doing more, you know, point-by-point streaming for a couple minutes every day. We have not done that, largely because you've been so busy, actually.
Yeah, it's totally my fault. Sorry, everyone. Also, I think last year our schedules were more lined up. Like, we did more things together.
Yeah, precisely.
Whereas this year, I feel like I was behind the screen so much.
Right.
Definitely need to moderate that next year.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I've been impressed. I mean, I've been impressed by seeing you run so many games. And it's, you know, it's me not running anything has whet my appetite for that. So probably I'll overcompensate in the same direction another year.
Excellent.
So let's focus on that. So you have run games all 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep, that's correct.
Two or three a day and then one today.
Yep.
So let me see here. So you have run, so I've got the, I'll run this interview is what I'll do.
Okay, great. Okay. I'm ready.
So the very first thing you did was you did Something Stinks in Stilton
at
the start of Thursday.
Yeah, so I ran a bunch of horror games over the course of the weekend. The first one was Something Stinks at Stilton, which some folks may know is a published module written originally for Lamentations of the Flame Princess. I ran it using OD&D and my own Insanity cards.
Right, which are great. Yeah. So you ran one episode of that.
Yep.
You've ran it before.
I have. I have, under multiple different systems, in fact.
Right.
I've run it under Warhammer 4th edition, and I've run it as an OD&D game with Insanity cards once before this, and then again today.
Right.
Every time, I always do make sure to include the couple of props I think that I've shown off in the past, whereas I have some printed out menus that I hand out, which is a lot of fun, and then I do actually serve the players cheese.
Yeah. So we talked about that maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago on our food show, on our cooking specific show. So when I got here to the con, he'd run the game already, and there was extra cheese and crackers waiting in the room.
Cheese courtesy of Malahi's in Hudson, Massachusetts. We actually had actual Stilton per the title of the game, which was delightful.
And then we finished it last night. So last night we got done with our games. With our stuff late Saturday night.
Yeah, we sat around and had a little Stilton to celebrate.
Midnight or something like that. We were here in the bar and we Xenoed, as I call it, the remaining cheese of halved it and couldn't decide who was going to finish it. So halved it and halved it and halved it and halved it and ate a whole bunch of crackers at the same time. And that's why our mouths hurt today.
That's always really well received. I always forget and then beat myself up for later the fact of not like really being enough on point of asking around if folks have any allergies. I need to do that more.
Yeah.
But I do always try to make sure make a point of telling folks. Of course, please enjoy the cheese if you would like. You don't have to. And if you would like your character to enjoy the cheese, whereas you don't want to partake, that is also all right.
Interesting. Yep. Interesting.
And then save versus poison. You ate the cheese, save versus poison.
Because the next day I was in a game where there were like M&Ms on the table and people started joking, wouldn't that be funny if there was a game where that happened? Right. And I'm like, that has happened.
Yep.
Which is great. Rank, letter grade, A, B, C, D, E, F. How well that game
am I weighting
went.
This against other games I ran, or just universal amongst all games I've ever run in my lifespan, or against specifically just the runs of this game? What's the context, Dan?
Universal standard, of course.
Universal standard. Okay, good question. Yeah. I'm trying to remember it. Of course, I have cheese for brains at this point for having run so many games over the course of 4 days. I think it went quite well. I would give it a B+. Only because I have had runs of that game that were just spectacular and crazy and really like I had players once who've turned it up to 11, and this one went very solidly and whatnot, and a lot of players got some insanities, and I don't think I killed any of them. I don't think any of them died. I'm trying to remember now. Don't think any of them died.
Gotcha. I will say that you have a really refined system again. Our friend Max calls it Paul Thulu, Savage Worlds Plus.
Right. Now I ran two different games in the Savage Worlds and Insanity Cards combinations, and in both of those, complete TPK. Both games.
Great. The other one was what?
So I ran game I ran was Mazes and Monsters, which is my 1980 set game where you're investigating the disappearance of some college students who are into this strange new fantasy game that's hit the scene recently called Dungeons and Dragons.
Sounds strange.
Yeah. It's super fun. Gamers all universally love role-playing characters who have never heard of Dungeons and Dragons. It just tickles everyone. It's super fun. That one, again, ended in a complete party wipe at the end, which is great. I do tell my players, like, my goal, especially at a convention horror game, is to make sure everyone goes insane or dies by the end. So that happened. The other game was a new one I've just developed called Closed for Swimming, which is set in 1992 the summer on a beach town where everybody is sort of business owners or attached to businesses that are suffering because the boardwalk has been closed for many weeks due to some shark attacks.
And fascinating.
I have to figure out what to do about that.
Fascinating. I first heard about that, I kind of wanted it to be a business simulator. but of course, it's a horror role playing game. How many people survived that?
None.
Oh, great! Excellent.
TPK.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And those games, both I use my very sort of prop-heavy approach, where typically I'm giving players, when I make them choose their characters, I give them a tent. Basically, I put out, for each character, I put out a tent with a name and maybe a quote from the character on it, and a physical prop that they get to play with during the course of the game. And that's it, and that's how you have to pick your characters, just with that limited bit of information.
You know, I feel like I've been seeing that more lately. Two of the games that I played in this weekend, neither with you, had something very similar where they had a one-page handout listing all the characters briefly like that. So a single page that got handed around the table with, a name, a role, a blam, and you had to pick just from that one page. And then you would get the actual formal character sheet from that.
I feel like it's a really wise choice. And here's why. Yeah. I've been to plenty of conventions, I've played plenty of convention games where the character sheets are just tossed out. And I do this myself. I've done this myself. I'm guilty of this. Just here's a pile of character sheets, guys. Go nuts.
Right.
And then there's a grab. Right. And then somebody doesn't move fast enough. And then they feel bad that they're left with what's left. Especially when there's exactly one character per player.
Right.
I feel less bad about it when I have extras, and so everybody at least has some choice.
Right.
But, I don't like that. So I like, and I always do it with dice. I say, here are all the characters. Now we're all going to roll d20s and then go high roll down for picks.
Okay. Now I will say, so when you do, I mean, on the one hand, I mean, that's actually less table work, right? So the extra, the small reduced version of the things you're choosing from are more work for the DM in advance, right?
Yes.
So if you're not thinking about that extra step, you'd say, I've made the characters, I printed the sheets, I'm ready to go, right? And this actually is adding one extra step, not a huge one extra step of preparatory work.
It's true. But it saves you so much table time.
Oh, I get that. And as a player, and many players, when you get the stack, really to make a fully informed choice, you should read all the content of all the text of all the sheets, and then you can actually make a valid choice, right?
Right.
So you wind up slowing the game way down, or you're making a decision just based on class, name, and race anyway.
Yep.
So it does, it actually is nice to prevent that bottleneck of someone feeling that they need to fully parse all the text on all the sheets.
You know, one of the funny things though is that I notice, especially in, when I'm running OD&D games, I have this one stable of characters that I use all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
More often than not, I see players picking those characters based solely on their name. Because I use, we use that funny name generator.
Right.
They have very flavorful names.
Right.
And so do you want to be Bungo the Drunk or Tello the Perfidious Magician?
Right.
And like, oh, right. I want to be...
Right. Ognan Pig Chaser
in my game.
Right?
Yeah.
That's good. It's a really good technique. I don't think I'd seen that until I played in your Mazes and Monsters game 2 years ago or something like that. And I got to remember that because
I've been
seeing more and more of that lately.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really enjoy that. I really enjoy running those horror games. I feel like, those are of this convention. I think those were my best games, and especially the Closed for Swimming one, which is shocking to me because I finished writing it on Monday. Like I was dreading that game coming up because, of course, when you submit your games to a convention, it's months in advance.
Right.
And oftentimes I've used this possibly foolish technique
right.
of forcing myself to write a thing by submitting a description of something that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And then saying, by the time the convention comes around, I'll have written it. This one I hadn't gotten around to.
See, that's actually why I didn't run anything. I wrestle with that.
Mm.
Pretty strongly is a couple years ago I did that and I was really uncomfortable with the results of I'm personally really bad at committing to a thing I haven't done way in advance and believing in myself that I'm actually going to get that done. So actually I totally had this confrontation with myself this year about TotalCon and I just could not commit to stuff that I didn't actually have completely prepared in hand months in advance.
Interesting. It's tough. And I definitely thought this is going to be the time finally where it bites me, right? I thought this is the one.
Okay.
I'm screwed.
Okay.
And I was dreading the game. And then on Monday, I sat down. And honestly, I had done dribs and drabs. I'd made the characters a couple days in advance. And I had a lot of ideas percolating and written like loose notes.
Right.
But then I said, okay, I need all the things I need to run this game. I need to know exactly how it's going to go.
Right.
Sat down on Monday and it just poured out. Luck, or it had been brewing in the back of my brain for so long that it was there all along and I just didn't believe in myself.
You know, sometimes the deadline is really good. I mean, sometimes the deadline is really good for that and it really works and that you're necessity is the mother of invention, and that's the experience of that right there. Yeah. So there's your horror games using Savage Worlds and Insanity cards, and you have really fine-tuned that over many years of running those things. And I'll remind our viewers that Paul's Insanity cards are available on GameCrafters.com.
TheGameCrafter.com.
There you go.
Yep.
Right.
Just search for Insanity cards. There are two different versions. I'll point out. There's the big jumbo sized. They're called the original jumbo sized cards. They're very big prints and they take up a bunch of table space. But there's more text. And then there's the new mini cards, which are a standard poker deck size.
Right.
Which take up a little less physical space.
Right.
A little more concise.
They are the Wandering DM's officially sanctioned Insanity mechanic.
Excellent. Yeah. I've used it with D&D, I've used it with Savage Worlds, used it with Warhammer.
Yeah.
They work with pretty much any system, whether it's a replacement for an existing sanity mechanic or an add-on for a system like say D&D that doesn't have an insanity mechanic.
Yep. Yep.
You've used them right for like random side effects of contact other planes, right? Or like there's certain wizard spells I think in 5th edition that just say like if the wizard fails his save he goes insane.
I think my last campaign I had a mega dungeon where there were a couple monuments inside that could do the standard original like goes insane thing.
Yeah.
And so yes, I did steal. I totally did steal the insanity cards for those effects.
It's funny. It's been a nice little side benefit of them of using that for like when the rules are very loosely touch insanity like that, and you're like, what does insane mean?
Yeah.
Oh, just grab a card and read the worst result and off you go.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other thing that you did Friday and Saturday is you ran two episodes of your recent DMs Guild publication, Vile Crypt of the
Reawakened
Sisterhood. The Vile Crypt, the Reawakened Sisterhood.
Yes. This is becoming a commercial for me. This is great. It's on DM's Guild. It's an even longer title. I know, I'm sorry. I made the title too long. An even longer title is R.A. Salvatore Presents the Vile Crypt of the Reawakened Sisterhood.
So this is an adventure, we probably said this before if you're a recurring viewer, that you have run for R.A. Salvatore's home play group and was officially sanctioned by him as being an acceptable, proficiently written and developed and run adventure, which is why it has his byline on it.
In fact, he was the one who encouraged me to publish it, right?
Which is great.
He said, you run great adventures, you should start publishing some of them, and if you want, you know, since we're running them for a part of our campaign, you can put my name on the title. And I said, yes, please.
Which is pretty great. You've run that a bunch of times at this point.
I have.
And so, of course, it's a full-blown adventure, right? Which the product itself, you would assume, would take 4, 5, 6 sessions to get through all the content?
Probably about 4. On the slightly lower end there.
Okay.
I think it took Bob's group about 4 sessions total.
Okay.
Like standard full 4-hour, four sessions. So yeah, running it as a convention game is a little difficult and requires a little modification.
Right.
I tell people at the table when I sit down, I say we're gonna play an excerpt from this adventure. I try to give them a piece that's going to lead to an exciting climax. But it's a false climax, right? Because there is more stuff in the adventure. So you can come away from it feeling like, oh, I had a fun time. It felt like I had an arc of a story, but then I know there's more, right? There's a sequel here.
So what happened with that? So with that cut down version, which is itself an interesting challenge, what happened with that last night?
It is actually kind of a funny story, right? After running the first one, so I was running it for about 6 players, or that's what I booked it for, but I had 2 cancellations the first time I ran it, so I was down to 4 players. Ran it for them. It went really well. They played through about as I expected. And I was, at the time, I'm looking at the map, and I know, okay, I definitely want to include these couple of rooms, and then maybe I'll trim these rooms and just reconnect these hallways in my brain. So I'm doing stuff like that, little micro edits on the fly as we're playing to try and fit the time spot. And the reason I was making those micro adjustments not pre-thought out, but at the table, is because we only had 4 players. And so with 4 players, I was like, they're getting through it a little faster than I anticipated.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that they have enough stuff to go through. And my theory was, it's because there's less players, there's less indecision, right? It's easier for them to debate and come up with an answer quickly about what they want to do and move forward. Downside is maybe it's a little more deadly, and I need to maybe have a 1 or 2 less monsters in each room.
Yeah.
And that worked fine, and did that fine. And I came up, I think, at night, and we were discussing in the hotel.
We were talking about that Friday night, about clearly when you have fewer players, there's less communication channels. They're gonna make decisions faster.
They're
gonna move through it faster. That's the same as a couple experiences I had in the last year, actually, and I'm like, 100% convinced. You are clearly correct.
Yeah, we were both very convinced that this is wise. We've come up with the right answer here.
Yeah.
I ran it the second time, full group of 6, and they were so on point and so competent at what they were doing, they blew through all the stuff I had laid out in 3 hours, and I still had another hour to go. And it was just, they were very familiar with 6th edition. They quickly... Fifth edition, very familiar with fifth edition D&D, so knew the rules, knew how to use the powers and whatnot. They had established a rapport very quickly, to the point of, I actually asked them at one point, we took a little break so everyone could, you know, use the restroom and whatnot.
Right.
And I asked them, I'm like, how many of you guys are in a regular campaign together, right? Like, are you, like, seems like you're part of a pre-existing group. And they said, it's just half of them, about 3 of them, were all there at the convention together. And the others were strangers who...
But I think that makes a big difference, actually. I do think that makes a big difference to have a core, and it could be as small as 2 even, I think. Mm-hmm. A core of 2 or 3 people that do know each other's rhythms and and communication, how to make decisions. And just as a little side point, like I've long had this theory that most bands have a core of 2 people, really have a core partnership of 2, maybe 3 people that other... other band members can possibly be swapped in and out, maybe. And I think that most game companies I've seen have been started with a core of 2 people. In that particular case, usually an engineer person and a business person that really form the core of the unit. And so I find that 2 or 3 people can really be the catalyst for leading the way of what potent communication looks like. Okay. So I'm not too surprised at that. But that having been said, having had getting 1 hour left in your session at the time is kind of awkward to deal with.
It was a little awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so for the first thing I did is I congratulated them.
Right.
I said, you guys are amazing. Like, I had no idea you would get through this much stuff in just 3 hours. You are really good at this game. Well done, everyone. And so that was nice to have a little congratulatory moment.
Yep.
Right. Unfortunately, the downside then feels like your prize is less game, right? And then like,
Yeah.
So I said, you know, I do have the full module here. It's meant for much longer play. So, like, I can keep running it and we can keep playing if you guys want.
Right.
But you're going to have to sort of set your own goals and figure out what you want to explore, what parts of the dungeon you want to keep at.
Right.
And they were happy to do that, right? And they started to do that. So we'd add another hour worth of play.
Okay.
The downside to that was that I had sort of plucked the most climactic thing to already have happened.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit not quite as exciting, right? Because it didn't have that big climax ending to it, right? It had, it was a little softer of an ending, I think.
Right. So we were talking about, that might be the best of not perfect options at that point. So
yeah.
we were talking about, I guess this morning, about like at what point have you wrapped a climax? Are you okay ending a four-hour session?
Yeah.
I think we agree that with 30 minutes left, you can totally call it a complete game
and
at that
fact,
point.
Several of my games did end about 30 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes early this year, which is unusual. So maybe I'm overcompensating in my pacing and not putting enough meat on the bone or something. I don't know. I'm probably overthinking it. Because it's actually most gamers I find at a convention, if the game is super fun and it reaches a satisfying conclusion and there's 20 to 30 minutes left, most players are excited by that. They think, oh, good, another 20 to 30 minutes to have a little rest or go see the exhibit hall or have a little more time with my meal.
Right.
Right. They're generally,
maybe debrief. Maybe actually just have a chat about
just
the game.
Just have a chat with your fellow players and your DM about how the game went. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So most players, I think, are actually pretty happy about that.
Yeah. But an hour might feel like not like you didn't get your full
An hour
full
starts
session.
To feel like you got cheated. Yeah.
I had two games this weekend that I was a player in that only lasted about half the scheduled time.
Hmm. Interesting.
So they were both two-hour sessions, and they were done, one was done with an hour to go, and one was done with about an hour and 15 minutes to go, and I was like, that wasn't what I would have picked, honestly. So there is kind of a balance there, but, getting your money's worth versus, anti-climax, possibly, concerns.
Hmm.
So I think you made the right choice. I think that was the right choice for my ear.
And the point is I didn't just make a hard decision in a vacuum, right? I informed the players about what was going on and I asked for their input, right? And I said, what do you guys want to do, right? I tried to give them some say in it, and they wanted to keep playing, so I was happy to give them more stuff to play.
Asking your players what you want, what a fascinating novel idea for me to hear about.
So it's so often the right choice. It's so often the right choice.
I gotta remember that.
I feel like this came up. When did this come? Oh, we were discussing.
I don't know, every other week.
Here at this convention, we went out to dinner with some folks. I think we went out to dinner with Colleen from Ten Dead Rats.
Yes, right.
And we were discussing Ten Dead Rats.
Right.
And talking about some of the stuff that goes on there. And I don't know if folks realize this, but we have a... Ten Dead Rats has a Discord channel where we use to just communicate and plan and do logistics with each other. And
now, that's not open to the public, right?
No, it's just for the cast.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really just meant to be like, who can't make it this week or, other extenuating circumstances are there. And, if they have questions or rules questions or whatnot, they can pose them there. But and just because we're friends, so we chat.
Okay.
And I've used that now a couple of times to have kind of bigger open question conversations with them about how the game is going and what they like and don't like and how that we can improve it both for each other as a game and for the audience who's watching.
Okay.
So I've actually now, probably more than any campaign I've run, had several out-of-character conversations about the game with the players, just to set expectations and to try and guide it to being a better experience. And I think the game is actually a lot better for it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's more like on your mind or more of a necessity, granted that it's like a publicly streamed game?
Possibly.
This
right?
being the
well,
first
well,
one.
Well, certainly
that you've
because
done.
There's an extra angle to it, right? Because yeah. not only are we talking about yeah. what makes it fun for the yeah. for the five of us, but we're also talking about what yeah. makes it a good stream, right?
Yeah.
So there's definitely, you know, there's an extra topic there, I guess.
Right.
I feel like my head is going crazy. I'm overthinking it. Yeah, I don't know. But I still think it's wise. I think it's a good course of action in general. I feel like we've had this discussion a couple times about general like problems that come up over the course of play, and oftentimes my advice is step back.
Yeah.
Do we have this conversation really about like...
Of course we have.
Do you do that? I can't remember when we talked about this, but like okay, granted that you're going to step back and have a conversation with the players about is this okay or is this not okay and what makes us better. And the question I feel like was, do you do it in the middle of the game? Or do you only do it between games?
Okay.
Will you interrupt a game to have that kind of conversation?
Interesting.
No, that doesn't strike any bells. I'm trying to remember when we talked about that.
I don't think that actually seems novel.
Okay.
That actually seems novel as a matter of fact.
That's an interesting aspect to it, and I think it comes down to like how urgent is it, right? Are we talking safety tools kind of stuff?
Well,
X card.
Right.
Those are the in-game moments where, you know. Yeah, if you're worried that you're have such sensitive content that you're presenting that you need stuff like X card or whatnot. Plan ahead, right? Because that's the nice thing about X card is that it mechanizes that kind of conversation and streamlines it, right? So you can almost not have that conversation, right? Just a visual indicator, boom, okay, X card, go on, do something else.
Right. You know, our friend Lara was talking to me last night about a very in-depth role-playing event she was engaged in.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of that? I forget the name of that system. It's like G something?
I don't recall.
Okay, anyway.
I'm not even sure which conversation we're referring to here, so.
Yeah, you'd stepped away for a little bit when I heard this. So like G-Team or G-Force or something.
Okay.
I probably mangled that horribly. Where they had a really in-depth character traumatic situation, she momentarily had to think about whether she was going to exit or not.
Interesting.
Right, and actually personally had to think about, is she comfortable with this thing that's going to get really strong emotions from her, considered it, and then said, yes, I am going to deal with this, and actually had a very emotionally cathartic moment as a result, which was interesting, but that the fact that the X rule was in effect gave her confidence that she had authority to make that decision.
I mean, that is the brilliance of a system like X card in my mind is the safety net that it creates for you to say like, I know it exists, therefore if no one's pointing at it, it's okay. What we're doing is okay. And that's frankly what I've seen from using the X card, where I have used it in the past. I didn't use it in any of my games this convention, but when I have used it in the past, like, the real value of it is just everyone knowing it exists and knowing what it is.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever actually seen anyone actually use it.
Yep. That's
but
what
knowing
said.
That it's there as a safety net makes everyone feel better about what's happening in the game.
Yeah.
So a lighter version of this did come up in one of my games. In one of my horror games, I have two characters who definitely have opposing... basically, one of them's a mobster and one is an FBI agent. And both of those facts are kept secret from the rest of the players.
Gotcha.
So only the FBI agent knows that they're an FBI agent, only the mobster knows they're a mobster.
Right.
You know, secrets eventually come out. And so they're going to have a conflict there. And also, by the way, they're dealing with horrors and going slightly insane. So eventually this stuff's going to bubble up to
the
top.
Right.
And so the two players come to a confrontation and weapons are drawn on each other, right?
Right.
And usually in most games, you don't want the infighting amongst your party. But in horror games, I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yep.
So I'm more than happy to see it. But there was definitely a moment where guns were drawn, a shot was fired, somebody was definitely very wounded and still had a gun trained on them, and so they surrendered and were clearly not happy, right? Mm-hmm. We're definitely presenting of real unhappiness. And I had a moment of, is the player unhappy?
Yeah.
Or is the player a great role player?
Yeah. I find that you have those moments. I think in those horror games, you get people that are good actors, and I don't play those games very much. But the one or two times I've stepped in, I've been fooled at least once. We had a case where someone was playing confused, and we actually thought they'd really forgotten stuff, right? When they were just playing, they'd forgotten stuff, and boy, they completely tricked me.
Yeah.
So I think you get more of I think you get more of that about actually being unclear.
Yeah. In this case, I was keeping my eye
right,
on
right.
it. They moved past that part of the scene. It was resolved. Later on, I actually checked in with both players, and they were both like, no, that was wonderful. I loved it, right?
Great.
And so it was clearly just good roleplay.
Yeah, great.
And I was like, oh, great, great. I was worried for nothing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to, you know, I tend to come to cons and I like a variety. I want to try a variety of things, and I want to be open to something that's going to pleasantly surprise me that I wouldn't have guessed. So, so last night I did play an in-depth, fully narrative storytelling game.
Interesting. How'd that go?
I hope I was game. I hope that I participated appropriately. I'm frankly a little confused about the progression of it. So frankly, the only reason it's on my mind at the moment is that the character you're describing as the mobster, because among the roles that were handed out to begin with is you had tough guy, brainy person, the medic, and then one of the they were all so post-apocalyptic. I gotta look up the system, whatever it is, like Children of the Atom. I guess that's a system.
Okay.
I might have scrambled that up. So post-apocalyptic, you're all playing at most teenagers because everyone who's an adult has become a horrible flesh-eating zombie type thing.
Cool.
And one of the character roles was actually just called the monster, right? So that's on my mind from last night is one person who's just designated the gonna do terrible things person as the monster. So I'm having to be careful about listening to you talk about the mobster and not have it be the monster.
Do you, so you've never played any of like the Fiasco games that get played at home?
No, I've never played Fiasco.
Oh,
I have not.
You should try Fiasco. You might like it.
I should try it. Yeah, I should try it.
What did you think? What about this experience? Would you play this game again? Would you play this style of game again? Would you ever run a game like this?
It wouldn't be high on the priority list.
Okay.
And I think that it's making me. I mean, I should think more about this later on. I mean, I think it is highlighting for me at the moment that role playing seems different than storytelling to me, right? And I mean, for many, many years, I've said the role playing games that I play are not telling stories at the table. You can tell stories about them after the fact, is what it's felt like.
Yeah.
But they're not coherent narrative stories at the table. They're a bunch of crazy stuff, there's probably a philosophical treatise you can write in the background. To me, this weekend is really highlighting for me that storytelling feels very different from role playing to me. And so I think that's helpful to help draw that contrast that I should think about later.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'll come up with a more coherent theory about that.
Yeah, I ultimately I think the problem here is that. I hate to too strictly define what a role-playing game is because I don't know then what to call the broader category of the types of games that these are all part of that, right? Like, clearly, there's a room where people play board games.
Yep.
And we're not talking about that. And
agreed.
Clearly, there's, like,
they're
miniature
not war
games.
They're not, right.
That's
they're
a
not,
thing.
They're, yeah, I agree.
Are these then two totally separate pockets, or do, you know, D&D and story gaming still belong on the... in the classification system under some parent, and if so, what's the name of that parent?
Yeah, I mean, I want to make that distinction, and I understand that the larger hobby gaming group is not gonna recognize my distinction at this point, which pains me a little bit. To me, they feel different, or having to double track my brain process as a player of both. The in-character stuff and juggling meta-narrative rules is a little bit making me unsettled.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, like my argument is simply that I like using role-playing game or TTRPG as the header.
That is the top-level thing.
So role-playing game is the uber generic. It just encompasses a lot of stuff.
It's making me think that, like, for my games, and frankly, I read the description of the games at the cons, and I'm actually having difficulty knowing which is which, actually. And so I'm starting to think that, like, I should actually advertise my games as close to board games or close to war games. Like, I think that the games that the traditional games that I played are admittedly, and again, original D&D on the cover, you didn't have the name role-playing game, hadn't been invented yet. It says war game on the box of original D&D. So I think I actually might need to start advertising my own games as close to war games.
Interesting. It's certainly, in just in a very nerdy classification system kind of problem, I'm realizing ultimately the problem is story games are called story games, and we know what story games are.
Right.
And they call it story games.
Right.
What is the other thing?
Right.
That is a role-playing game that's not a story game. I feel like we don't have a word for it. D&D.
I feel like it used to be role-playing game. Yeah, I feel like it used to be role-playing game, and I think you can dig up quotes from Gygax defending it against in-depth character play acting. And obviously, he doesn't get to set the rules for everybody in the world. I mean, I feel that that's what role-playing game, what RPGs used to get used to for, and that is has evolved into something kind of different than what I was accustomed to at one
point. It's tough. I think it's a tough problem to solve, ultimately, because I like all these activities, and sometimes I like, a little chocolate in my peanut butter, and sometimes, sometimes I want like peanut butter crunchy and sometimes smooth.
Okay.
Right. So I like playing with a lot of different stuff. Okay. But the real problem comes in when you're making a convention game and you have to write a couple hundred word paragraph.
Yeah.
Not even a couple hundred words, right? Like a four sentence paragraph that describes your game well enough to the convention attending audience to understand what the hell you're gonna play.
Right. And the other thing is you're quite likely siloed, right? Mm. So I'm in the habit of playing wargamey type D&D, and someone else is in the habit of always playing story games, and you might, like a fish in the water, you might not see that that's a distinction that you have to communicate to somebody else.
Yeah.
So you might just describe, here's the setting, here's what the characters are like, here's the roles you're gonna play, and not realize that you even need to make that distinction maybe. Mm-hmm.
Interesting nut to crack.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll end up talking about this more in the future. I think feel like we've
gone
down a really strange rabbit hole here.
Well, this wasn't what we expected. I will say that we've been surprised a couple times, right? Yeah, a couple of us have been surprised this weekend of getting in game A and getting in game B instead. Yep. Like both me and our mutual friend Adam, who actually was here a couple minutes ago. I would draw him on camera right this second, actually. Got in a game, and the funny thing is, we sat down at breakfast on Friday, and he asked me, "What are you playing in?" And I said, "Blah blah 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 blah," right? And he's like, "Oh, well, that sounds very interesting." And we got up, like, "Okay, see you later. Have a good game." We walked together into the same room and sat at the same table, right? And we were in the same game, and absolutely did not recognize it from my description versus his interpretation of what he'd read, right? So we're playing in the same game, and then halfway through and he's expecting heavy character stuff. I've actually developed a voice and a character for it, and then halfway through it just turns into a resource management war game.
I think as Adam put it, the game ultimately became yet a third thing that was neither of your expectations.
Absolutely.
I have a lot of sympathy.
I would play that, but I don't want anybody to be surprised by it.
I have a lot of sympathy for the DM who ends up in that situation because I've written enough of these descriptions where I'm always worried of, like, did I craft these limited number of words I have just right to fit to explicate to people what kind of expectations to bring to the table? And again, I'm sure I fail frequently. I fail frequently.
I feel like I do that myself. Mm-hmm. In my particular silo, not thinking about the much wider variety of gaming that exists nowadays.
Interesting.
So, Paul, I notice that you are wearing a referee shirt.
I am. I even, here it is.
Yes,
I even have a whistle.
You have a whistle, right? And and simultaneously, I'm wearing a shirt that says Bad Guy, I'll point out.
Yep.
Why is that a coincidence?
Not at all.
Is there a deeper meaning?
Still in costume from our game that we just played this morning. We ran this game twice together, as you well know, this morning and yesterday morning. This was our boss fight for breakfast game, which we ran at PAX Unplugged together, and we've run a couple of times now. The gist of it,
with a different session, with a different scenario,
We've
run various boss fights,
but
this was a brand new scenario that you hadn't run until this weekend.
Yeah, just for anybody who doesn't know what is a boss fight, it's a 2-hour D&D game where we focus on one very climactic encounter. Basically, the whole 2 hours are spent in round, usually in combat rounds, yep. with a lot of intricate things going on, usually a lot of intricate terrain to right. manage and multiple different enemies. I think usually I manage to incorporate both an active enemy who dislikes, who's trying to stop the players, and a force of nature type of enemy yep. that's just chaos and is gonna harm anyone that's near it.
I just see that pattern now.
Yeah. I like that a lot. So
and there's a battle map and there's miniatures and it is kind of wargamey. So it I'm like pretty, I'm aces,
yeah.
baby.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about that is the fact that it's co-DM'd, and to communicate those roles to the players, we get in these get-ups now, which is that my role is that I'm the impartial referee, that I am here to adjudicate the rules and make sure that the game runs fairly, and if anyone has any questions about how the game runs or how their characters work or anything, they should direct them to me, and I will do so fairly and
truthfully.
And truthfully.
Right.
Right. Whereas Dan is out to get you. Dan controls the bad guys, and he's actively trying to win the game and beat the players.
Yes. I want to win. I'm paying very close attention, hopefully, to what they're doing and using my forces to the maximum extent possible. Mm-hmm. Getting the opportunity, while he's refereeing, getting the opportunity to think through my options, spells, things like that, that could be the most devastating each round. Trying to misdirect, usually taunting, usually play acting.
Yeah.
So that's
the funny thing, right? For a game that at the outset sounded very wargamey, ultimately there is a fair chunk of roleplay that ends up in it because you're playing these vocal, intelligent enemies who like to taunt the players. In this case, Total Con had a theme this year, and that theme was Saturday morning cartoons.
Right.
So I wrote up a scenario that included player characters that are all based on the D&D cartoon characters. So we had Hank the Ranger and Sheila the Thief and Presto the Magician. And Dan got to play Venger and Shadow Demon and summon orcs and skeletons to do his bidding.
Right.
Yeah, it was great. But then, of course, there was the Force of Nature. I did also have Tiamat on the table, who would just destroy anything that came near her.
Right. So the interesting, I think that was an interesting discovery that you just pointed out today is, you know, you have other games, 5th edition games maybe, with a lot of in-depth combat. Okay, you know, maybe once in a while, and this happens in every edition of D&D, maybe once in a while that combat gets a little bit draggy.
Yeah.
And so with this, but with the interesting thing about the boss fight is that I am actively, you know, working on the character voice and working on taunting comic book style, the players. And they start to warm up to that, and they start to give me energy back about taunting me back and really, really being interested in sticking it to the villain.
It's funny, right? So for two
so the
hours, com-
the combat winds up having more role-playing elements than other stuff that we try to design it for.
I feel like your point about the energy is really, really important, right? That, like, it is this ramp-up of energy over the course of play, and that 2 hours feels like a long time to spend on one combat, and yet it doesn't feel draggy ever,
right?
You know? And in fact, if anything, it crescendos.
Right. Yeah. That's happened that really has happened each time we've done that with a variety of different scenarios, is that the more I stick it to them, the more invested they get in trying to stick it back to the actual villains, which is great.
It's a really fun game to run.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was run originally out of necessity in that I don't like to get up at 8 a.m. after having been up the night before until the 2 or 3 in the morning. And that's usually the first game time is like 8 to noon period, and then there's usually a break for lunch.
Right.
And so I thought, I'd like to play a game before lunch, but I don't have 4 hours for that.
Right.
So how do I fit a D&D game into 2 hours?
Right.
How do I make that work?
Right.
And that's how Boss Fight originated.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember how we ended up going down the road of incorporating the two DMs and the adversary role.
Yeah, I feel like the flame adventure was the first.
Well, I think we had just been talking about how do you run a two DM game in general.
Exactly. And we've done that historically, right? You go back to 10, 15 years or so. Like we co-DM'd equally, actual DMs for a while, and sometimes that was funny, and then sometimes we stepped on each other's feet with counter rulings or different opinions about pacing or stuff like that.
It became actually very difficult, as I recall.
Yeah.
Very difficult for us.
Yeah.
We were never really unhappy with each other, but just we recognized, I think, that we were getting in each other's way.
Right. So a couple of years ago, we were thinking about we need to explicitly have defined roles. What could those roles be? Yeah. And so we were kicking that around for a while. Right. And this isn't entirely novel, because we discovered later on that there was terminology for this, namely the adversary player.
So have other folks done it? Is there other record of this having happened?
Yeah, when we first did this, some of the commentators, and I don't know who, said, yeah, that's called the adversary.
Interesting.
That they'd done before.
I don't feel like I've ever played in a game that uses it.
I
can't think of anything I've read that describes it being done.
No, I hadn't. I hadn't.
Yeah, interesting.
So
super fun, though. You know, super fun. We really enjoy it, and we're continuing to try and develop it and push it and find new venues to run it at. And
we are.
Yeah. I mean, heck, we bought shirts for this thing, right?
We did. We're both to some extent engineers. I really like fine tuning the process, honestly.
Yeah.
So in the past we had, you know, the gag today was one of us always tells the truth and one of us always lies. Starting right now is what I was doing.
Yeah. It was great too. And then somebody asked you. They asked you like the impossible to answer question of like, is he telling the truth or something?
And yes. He said, Do you always lie? He asked me, do you always lie? And I said, yes.
And he said, yes. This is, it hurts my brain to think about that statement.
Win. See, that's the win. But in the past, right? So like you go back a year ago, we weren't in this, right? And a gentleman did turn to me. He was thinking about a strategy, and I leaned in, and you should do this. You should totally do this. And then you cut me off, and you're like, don't trust him. Don't trust him.
Yeah.
So admit it. So it did seem like a good idea to visually
I agree with that. I definitely agree. And I like the visual communication.
Right.
And actually, I felt like at this morning's game, it was being picked up on even more, where people were like addressing me as impartial referee, please. Can you adjudicate this? Right.
Yes.
Right. And I'm like,
yes
of course.
That was fabulous. Honestly, I was really happy with that.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's worth going into the detail of that specific issue, because it led to a wonderful moment in yesterday's game. So previously at PAX Unplugged, I think his debate was, I have a magic missile, I'm casting magic missile, I have three missiles, should I send them all against the High Priest, or should I split them up? And you were roping the High Priest and telling them, oh, you should definitely split them up.
Right.
I'm very weak and probably one will just kill me.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I had to lean in and say, don't trust what he's trying to win. Don't trust him. Do not trust what Dan says. And then yesterday,
and it worked that time. That worked, because he totally did. He totally did just hit me with one of the three, and I did survive it because I did have more than that.
So yesterday, the gentleman playing Presto the Magician, in one round, cast Shield on himself, and then started goading you, and you were trying to decide where your magic missiles were going.
I wasn't paying attention to that moment because we had a friend with us, and I was chatting with him maybe just for a couple minutes, and I missed the fact that Presto cast Shield.
Distracted by the Shield,
which is proof against magic missiles, if you don't know.
Yeah. So then you were casting your magic missile, and Presto started saying, like, come at me, man, you know. Yeah.
I'm trying to put somebody down, right? And you go after the weakest link, and I'm thinking Magician has the lowest hit points
had one hit point left at that time.
Right. Boom. Choice, right? Is that the right choice?
Yep. Shot all his missiles at Presto. Ding, ding, ding. Nope. Shield
off off the magic shield. So that was very embarrassing.
You know, interesting, though, how... a thing that happened in a 2DM game that couldn't possibly happen in a 1DM game, in that you got distracted and missed the thing that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
You could never have that in a 1DM game. That's just not possible.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You're right. And so, lesson learned. Good.
Yeah.
That's a good lesson
also,
for me, right?
Also hilarious. Like, then Dan, of course, like, erupted in laughter and was useless for, like, we lost several minutes of gameplay at that point as Dan tried to recover himself from realizing that he had been
Well, you really laid it on. I mean, you really laid it on at that point of, like, Dan, you fell for your own trick. You fell for your own, taunt them into the spell that you're proof against. That you really...
Well, right, because you used to do that as Flame, right? You had resistance to fire.
Absolutely.
And you kept trying to be like, please, no, not fire. Don't shoot me with fire. And it turns out, like, no, fine. I'm immune to that. Oh, so good. Such a good moment.
So you will admit, that happened. That particular moment happened yesterday. We played it again today. Will you agree that I did better today?
You did. Well, you won, right? Yeah. Right. Yesterday, the kids escaped, yeah. And today they did not.
Lesson learned. I was paying way. I walked away. Our other friend said, "What did you learn from that?" I'm like, "I need to pay attention all the time. I need to watch them like a hawk." And yeah. That was definitely on my mind today. And I did not let anything slip today. And I kind of stomped them into the dirt.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh my goodness. Delightful.
There was a game, wherever it was, a couple of years ago, something totally different that I went to, and I was doing a bunch of prep work as a player, and you asked me, like, why are you doing this? And I was like, to win.
Oh, right, yes, yeah.
Or you said, why are you doing this, to win? I go, yes.
Yeah. Wasn't that the jousting tournament
yeah,
at
was.
Gary Conn,
it was,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
You put a lot of effort into that.
I did.
Way more effort than I would.
I had a colleague at school suggest that I write an academic paper about what I'd done for it, actually.
You should do that.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. Even if it's complete tongue-in-cheek humor, I would love to see that. But it probably wouldn't be. It would probably be actually a really legit academic paper, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I consulted with another math professor about what I was doing for that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's really a shame you didn't win, because I would love to see that like trophy acceptance speech where like I'd like to thank the math department.
Yeah.
For their help in consulting in my strategy.
They changed the thing. They at Gary Conn they used slightly different rules. They slightly different rules from what's in the original D&D book.
Dirty
so when
pool.
I got there, it was my optimization was not ultimately the optimization what they had. Fortunately, you took a photo of their. I dug through our photos and you'd taken over somebody's shoulder the photo of the actual rules. So now I do actually have the actual rules that I can optimize for a future. Right.
Watch out, future Gary Conn jousting competition players.
Yeah.
Dan's coming.
Yeah, there were people on a forum asking about that, and I was able to answer what the actual rules were.
That is great.
Yeah.
I mean, and the best part about it is that the way that thing is run at Gary Conn is completely casual and light, right? That it's not even an official scheduled thing. It's just set up on the side in the hallway, and you like walk by and be like, oh, you want to sit down and play for 2 minutes and do a joust?
Yeah. And you're making funny sounds with coconuts,
and you have
coconuts.
Yeah,
you're
going to
make cloppy sounds with coconuts on each run.
It's clearly much more lighthearted than you're taking it.
I got past the first round, even with the changed rules. I got past the first round. Anyway,
okay.
No matter how you cut it, there's some luck involved. Yeah. So anybody that sits down to that, you've always got a chance.
Yeah. I feel like I asked you about it, like how much did it help you? And you're like, well, I boiled it down to a 50-50 shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the best you could do.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Okay. So any final thoughts on TotalCon 34?
I want to say, or is this 34?
I think it's number 34.
Is it? Yep, something like that. I love TotalCon, right? I wasn't coming until last year, and you invited me, which is great. I love getting to see a number of our friends here in the greater Boston area that I don't normally do, which is wonderful. I would really like to get my DM preparation in advance better so I could run more games. I'm jealous, frankly. Of you running seven games. I'm impressed and jealous of you running seven games in the last 4 days.
It was a bit much. I think that's my lesson for next year is I'm definitely going to try and moderate a little bit more and give myself more opportunities to play games. Although I think also I need to put more effort into the planning of that because I do think that I enjoy convention games way more when I know at least one other person at the table, right? So like if you and I are going to play in a game together or I'm going to play a game with Adam or play a game run by Adam or whatever it is, you know.
And that feeds into our, like, if you have a core of at least two or three people that know each other, that really kind of turbocharges the party action at the table in a very nice way.
Yep, agreed.
And you can have nice games with total strangers at the table, but it makes it a lot easier to catalyze that.
Yep.
Yeah. And I love the boss fights. I'm super happy to perform that with you. I got to thank you because this is the first time I've ever... You know, one of the really interesting things here was it was the first time ever for me to recreate a pre-existing character that had a voice and had a profile from like a TV show. And I actually did sit down and practice that for a number of days and not something I'd done before. And I think it really added some extra tools in my toolbox of voice playing and ranges and tempo that I hadn't really ever had a chance to think through. And I'm very, very... I thought it might be a total failure, right?
Yeah.
I committed to it.
Everybody loved it.
Yeah, it's been nice. It's been nice feedback on it. So I think I got a couple extra tools in my toolbox as a result.
I'm honestly a little jealous of it because in this morning's game, we only had 6 out of 7 players. So one of the kids didn't get chosen. And of course, the one that didn't get chosen is Uni, the unicorn.
Right.
And I got to do a little bit of Uni voice, which I love doing.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I wish I had gotten... I wish Uni was always an NPC and had a bigger role because I just love to do Uni voice a lot more.
Gotcha. I was so surprised when you made that actually one of the pickable characters.
You know, usually I run this game for up to eight players.
Gotcha.
And there are only six kids, and I was just trying to beef up their side and add more options. Yeah. So I chucked Uni in as well. Playable.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of drama and a lot of tension and a lot of fun. So if any viewers want to see more or hear more about boss fight type events, we would love to hear about that, hear about your comments.
Yeah, we're definitely looking for opportunities to do more of it.
If you participated at TotalCon and want to document what your thoughts were about that, we would love to hear about that as we continue to refine and look for venues where we can expand that. Event.
Yeah, for sure. If you'd love to just play it and have a thought about where that can happen, let us know. Drop us a line either via email or in the comments. We'd love to hear from you.
We would.
If you have any thoughts in Elv, were you at TotalCon? Were you here and we missed you? I'm so sorry. Drop us a line in the comments. Tell us about your convention experience. Also, would love to hear any thoughts that folks have about crafting the perfect convention blurb for your convention game.
Yes.
Because that's a really tough nut to crack, and I'd love to hear more thoughts about that as well. So please leave us some comments.
And we also got to meet some people that were viewers of the show I hadn't met in person. So we did. A couple times and said, hey, we know you from this show.
Yep.
And super thrilled to hear that people watch. That's just the best thing.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Remember two products we talked about this episode, both by Paul. You got the Insanity cards on thegamecrafter.com, which are excellent. And on DM's Guild, the 5th edition adventure, R.A. Salvatore presents the Vile Crypt of the Reawakened Sisterhood.
Perhaps the easiest way to find any of that stuff is it is all, of course, linked on my blog at paulsgameblog.com.
Great. And here's the end of the show. And now you'll enjoy the ending of the show.
Yes, please.
In which...
Subscribe,
share on... You can find us under the title Wandering DMs on both Twitch and YouTube and also Twitter, Wandering DMs. Please look for us there.
Yeah. Please subscribe to our channel here on YouTube or follow us on Twitch. That both helps us actually enormously. So please do that if you haven't done that. It really helps out the show quite a lot. Also, our show is available in audio-only podcast form. So you can find those on Google Podcasts or iTunes or Spotify or our own website, wanderingdms.com. If you are listening to this show on podcast form from one of those carriers, please take a moment to rate and review us. We would really appreciate that as well.
We would. And as always, we really want to thank our patrons on patreon.com for supporting the show. We've met a number of them this weekend, actually, which is just the best thing ever. So thank you so much. If you would like to join our patrons in supporting the show, please go to patreon.com/wanderingdms. And we would very, very much appreciate you being part of our support team. Remember that we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be back next week. I think that week is daylight savings time, right? So that's going to be 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Okay. Don't forget to set your clocks back.
I believe next
Change
week.
Change your smoke detector batteries.
Good call. Just in case any wandering dragons come in the next week, we want you to be with us. Please join us at that time for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.